Is Brazil's president really reaching for the Trump playbook? On Independence Day, Jair Bolsonaro in the capital to lead a rally against Congress and the Supreme Court. In the capital, no January 6th moment earlier, as critics had feared, but institutions are being tested, same as during the storming of the U.S. Capitol by Trump supporters. Bolsonaro claims the system's rigged, he's called to change the voting system, and there have been cries of witch hunt as corruption probes against the current administration gain steam. Trump may be out of office, but he's still the model for Brazil's far-right leader. And after Brasilia, it was on to Sao Paulo for Bolsonaro, due in the afternoon for another march. Sao Paulo, the stronghold of another populist, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, the leftist former president who's now out of jail and ahead in the polls. Lula's supporters were told to steer clear of Bolsonaro rallies, not to offer an excuse to suspend rule of law, as they put it. Could Brazil's far-right leader, himself a former army captain, really try some form of power grab? Or is that overstated? More broadly, how's the world's third largest democracy holding up in these times of COVID and populism? Today in the France 24 debate, we're looking at Bolsonaro upping the pressure. Joining us from Sao Paulo, Wall Street Journal correspondent Samantha Pearson. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks very much.
Academic Marcia Camargos is a member of the activist group Alerte France Brésil.
That's it.
Happy Independence Day.
Thank you.
All right. And from Lisbon, attorney Fernando Santiago, happy Independence Day to you as well.
Thank you very much, Francois. Happy to be here.
The France 24 debate on Facebook and Twitter, hashtag F24debate. Yeah, they were bussed in by the thousands, they say. Jair Bolsonaro's supporters hoping for the largest turnout since the mass protest that called for the impeachment of then-President Dilma Rousseff. Solange Mougin has more on what was at stake when the day began.
He's revved up the crowds before. Jair Bolsonaro has never shied away from rallying his most ardent fans, like here in Rio last May. Openly nostalgic of Brazil's military dictatorship, President Bolsonaro has also of late reminded the country of his ties to the military, hosting an unprecedented procession of tanks on August 10th. A flexing of military might, a show of his avid fan base, Bolsonaro has launched an offensive. For polls show that 60% of voters would, under no circumstances, vote for him again in next year's elections. And his presidency has been hit hard by a raft of judicial investigations, including Supreme Court probes, ones that the far-right leader shot back against last week, calling for his supporters to rally and to issue what he calls an ultimatum to the Supreme Court.
After September the 7th, those one or two who dare to defy us, defy the Constitution, disrespect the Brazilian people, they will know how to return to their place.
Bolsonaro's critics say they're fearful that the president is encouraging an attack on the courts in the vein of Trump fans charging the U.S. Capitol. In an open letter, some 150 left-leaning international political figures said that they were gravely concerned about the imminent threat to Brazil's democratic institutions. A likely challenger in next year's elections, former President Lula da Silva, also commented on social media, saying Bolsonaro was sowing hatred, division, and violence rather than providing solutions.
So, Samantha Pearson, Brasilia seems to have gone off peacefully. How are things where you are?
So, yeah, I'm here in Sao Paulo. Our office is actually on Avenida Paulista, which is the main avenue in Sao Paulo, which is normally where all the protests are held. At the moment, it's very much a party atmosphere here as well. There's a lot of people in Brazilian T-shirts and Brazilian colours with flags. There's horns blaring, people selling souvenirs, people drinking beer. Now, this is normally how Brazilian protests start. I've been here in Brazil now for 10 years. I saw the massive protests in 2013. And that's how they normally start off. They start off in a very kind of Brazilian party-like way. So what we're really watching is what happens later. What happens when it gets dark? What happens when people get really drunk? What happens with the police? So at the moment, things are okay. The mood seems okay at the moment. The police have got things under control here, but there's still a really big question mark about what happens later today.
And just to be clear, it is exclusively pro-Bolsonaro supporters who are out in the street in front of you there?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, on Avenida Paulista, I only saw people supporting Bolsonaro. I mean, there has been a great deal of fear. I think even I'm married to a Brazilian. A lot of his family actually voted for Bolsonaro in 2018. And they all told me, you know, don't go out today. Don't go out into the city today. And a lot of people are actually quite scared about what will happen today. So they've been staying at home. So I imagine the same goes for a lot of the opposition groups. I mean, they may come out later, and that's when we may see clashes and things get more violent.
Earlier in the day in Brasilia, the president addressing those fears. Let's listen to Jair Bolsonaro.
We don't want disruption. We don't want to fight with any branch. But we can't accept efforts to distort our democracy. We can't accept anybody who puts our freedom at risk.
We can't accept anybody who puts our freedom at risk. Marcia Camargos, how do Brazilians interpret it when they hear the president say that? Is this just, you know, a bit of political grandstanding?
Well, what happens is that he's just like a cornered animal showing his claws, because it's now in the hands of Justice Barroso. It's the minister of the current minister of the Supreme Court, make him cancel his whole ticket. And he won't be able to present himself in the next elections. And as well, it's worse than that for him, of course, he will have to step out of office.
Yeah, because what,
he's desperate.
People watching from the outside are thinking, well, the election's 13 months away. But you're saying that, in effect, he can't go to those elections if the Supreme Court rules against him.
He can't go. And I have to state that all we see now is the consequence of the impeachment of Dilma Rousseff in 2016, which was actually a coup d'etat followed by the prison of Lula, so that he would get out of the way of Bolsonaro, in that he could be elected.
Hang on,
so
you call it a coup d'etat, but yes, she was impeached by Congress. There was a vote.
I know
from
that,
lawmakers.
But it was all manipulated. And afterwards, you see, Lula was arrested, and it shows that everything was just a complot, something made up.
A plot
in order to get him out of the elections and to elect Bolsonaro. And when you open Pandora's box, you can never tell what will come out of it. And that's what's happening in Brazil.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate here. The language of calling it a plot, what happened to Dilma Rousseff.
It is.
Isn't that mirror the language that now Jair Bolsonaro is using against
Not at all, because just after the coup d'etat, the plot, Lula was arrested as well. It was an illegal prison, and he was a political prisoner. And afterwards, I mean, everything went out of control, that nowadays not even the upper class and huge sectors of the middle class, they are not supporting Bolsonaro any longer.
Fernando Santiago, as an attorney, when you hear the accusations flying from one side to the other, your thoughts on after the huge strain Brazil's democracy came under with the impeachment of Dilma Rousseff, with the imprisonment of Lula, how much strain is it under this time?
Well, there's a lot of strain going on, as you can see, a lot of tensions. Brazil is becoming a very polarized countries with lots of pressure from the left and from the right side. Jair Bolsonaro got into power thanks to a huge dissatisfaction from the public with 20 years of the left and the huge scandals of corruption going on every day, which ended up with, of course, the prison of Lula and with the impeachment of Dilma Rousseff, which, as you said, it was declared by the Congress, not by the actual president, not by the president Bolsonaro. And we have to say that both sides, they have their side of the story, and it's normal that it's like that. But what we can see is that Jair Bolsonaro, despite anything, still benefits a lot of support, as we can see on the street right on this moment precisely.
How much of that is genuine support?
Well, it's hard to say. We can never say. But it seems to me that even if you have some part of it that we could admit that even eventually it was not genuine, I don't know. I think we can't, we could not mobilize that huge amount of people on the streets without some willing from the people.
And when Bolsonaro says we can't accept anybody who puts our freedom at risk, he's clearly targeting those Supreme Court judges. Is he undermining democracy?
Well, I don't know if he's clearly referring to the judge. He is referring to the judges, of course, but not clearly. He's doing that a little softer than that way. Well, there's a lot of political stuff going on, and there's a huge difference between words and actions as well. So we need to see the end of the day. There's still a whole bunch to come. There we will see Bolsonaro's speech in São Paulo later on. There we think we have even more elements to judge about his conduct or misconduct.
So it's not just one case, Samantha Pearson. It's several. There's cases of spreading disinformation among his supporters, financing issues, inciting violence. And among the scandals dogging Bolsonaro, a COVID vaccine procurement scandal that you wrote about in the Wall Street Journal, accusations of favoritism in purchasing doses of the Indian-made Covaxin vaccine. Is that the most important of these cases that could have potentially come up against him?
I think it's one of the most important, yes, because if you remember when Bolsonaro was elected in 2018, he very much chose this platform of anti-corruption. You know, I'm Bolsonaro, I'm different from everyone else in Brasilia. I'm a different type of politician. And so just the glimpse that perhaps, and there is no solid evidence yet, it's important to say that, but just the glimpse that perhaps he was connected to somebody who was involved in something corrupt. I mean, that just destroys his image with the people, his core voters, you know, those people that really want him to come back next year. And I just wanted to add to the point that we were just talking about. It's obviously important to see what's happening on the streets right now. But I would say, actually, what's more important is to understand the people that are home today, because those are the people that are going to change the results of next year's elections. The people that we see out on the streets, they're the people that are going to vote for him no matter what, you know. But what we really want to know as journalists, analysts, we want to know, what are those people at home? Who are they going to vote for? Because I think a lot of people still really hate Lula. They hate the PT. They believe that Lula is corrupt. I know we were just talking about the conviction against Lula. Obviously, that was thrown out because of the procedure was terrible. The judge was found to be biased. However, the evidence still exists. A lot of people still believe that Lula is corrupt. So now they're stuck between choosing between Bolsonaro next year and Lula. And a lot of people actually don't like either of them. But this is the really important point. But if they had to choose, would they go back with Lula or would they go with Bolsonaro?
And excuse me for making the parallel with the U.S.'s 2020 election campaign. But now, when you describe it that way, is it about firing up the base, whether it's Lula or Bolsonaro, the one who can get those unconditional supporters in greater numbers out?
I kind of think, I mean, it's today is really about showing Bolsonaro wants those pictures. He wants that picture of Avenida Paulista completely full of his supporters. He wants this to prove next year when he runs for election and perhaps he loses. And then he's going to say, well, you know, there was election, there was fraud in the vote, and that's why I lost. And that he wants these photos from today to show that his support is much bigger than the polls suggest. But what I think is actually important is to understand those people that aren't here today, because I think a lot of people, I suspect a lot of people would still vote for him, people that are at home today. But I think he actually does have quite significant support. And in 2018, a lot of people were embarrassed to say they would vote for Bolsonaro because everyone already knew that he was a supporter of, he fought under the dictatorship, Brazil's past military dictatorship. And a lot of people were embarrassed to say they were going to vote for him. And I think after COVID, the pandemic, so many people died in Brazil. He was blamed for that. And I think that's even more true today. A lot of Brazilians don't want to publicly say they would vote for Bolsonaro. But having spoken to them in private, and if you really push them and say, but if it was between Lula and Bolsonaro, I would vote for Bolsonaro. So I think that's actually what we should be looking at to work out what's going to happen next.
Marcia Camargo?
Not at all, because they say about the corruption in Lula's era, but then in his government. But we can't forget that Bolsonaro is linked to the militia, to the organized crime, and it is a sort of Brazilian mafia. And even if he has just a minority of supporters, they are very violent, very aggressive, and he wants to instigate an uprising to spread fear, spread violence and chaos.
So Fernando Santiago, that's an important point. So we've had corruption cases on both sides. We agree on that. But what we have with Bolsonaro perhaps is a militarization of politics, himself a former army captain, many military people who are in government. Do you agree with what you just heard, that there is this potential for some kind of assault on rule of law?
Well, first of all, we don't agree on corruption on both sides. We do have some scandals which are really proved and rarely solid on Lula's and the leftist party side. But we have some, some maybe indicios of corruption in Bolsonaro related specifically on the COVAX scandal, but which are not proved yet so far. Well, we can say that indeed there is corruption on both sides. And what you said about militarization, yes, Bolsonaro capitalized over all, politics in Brazil. They left the military from sideways since the Brazil was a dictatorship, and they did it was a natural reflex. But the thing is, we forgot that between the military, there's a lot of very qualified people, very qualified, intelligent people that are willing to go back and to do some useful work for the country. So Bolsonaro, he does indeed have the basis of this military, but I'm not so sure, and I won't say that he's going to use the military for any personal reasons. I don't think Brazil will do so. Brazilian institutions are very strong. They won't accept something like that.
Brazilian institutions very strong. We're going to pick up on that point when we come back. Stay with us. You're watching the France 24 debate. Welcome back, or welcome if you're just joining us. It's the France 24 debate. Presidential elections in Brazil are still 13 months away, but already there are accusations that the country's president, Jair Bolsonaro, is reaching for the Trump playbook, talking about a witch hunt with criminal probes opened into corruption and asking for a change in the electoral system. We're talking about it with Samantha Pearson, Wall Street Journal correspondent in Sao Paulo. And on this Independence Day, your offices are just above where they are marching in favor of Bolsonaro. Marcia Camargos, member of the activist group Alerte France-Brésil, and academic historian. Fernando Santiago, attorney, is with us from Lisbon. Welcome back to all of you. Just before the break, you heard Fernando say that Brazil's institutions are strong.
Not at all. They've never been as strong as other democracies, and they have been very hardly shaken with the coup d'etat against Dilma. And after that, as I say, we are seeing the consequence of all this. And when he says that Bolsonaro is not corrupt, I've got all the scandals of his children that buy things by cash. And there are lots of the congressional inquiry as well for the pandemic, COVID pandemic. And he should have bought the vaccines. He was contacted by Pfizer in August 2020, and he couldn't be bothered even to answer. So he just did that. He started the negotiations in the beginning of March, when it was the peak of the Brazilian pandemic. And now, you know, the result. We have more than
half a million deaths. Samantha Pearson, is it really a fascination with the Trump way of governing when it came calling COVID just a flu at the time?
Yeah, I mean, there are very strong parallels there with the US. He found that was, at the beginning at least of the pandemic, he really latched on to that discourse as a way to connect with his base in the same way that we saw in the US. I feel like things changed, you know, going into the this year. So many Brazilians have died of COVID. I mean, the death toll has been horrific here. And I feel like a lot of Bolsonaro supporters, you know, they started losing their family members. They saw up close what this disease can do. They started getting vaccinated too. So Bolsonaro has backtracked a little bit, and he is now blaming the Supreme Court, because at the beginning of the pandemic, the Supreme Court gave state governments in Brazil power, basically, to do what they want in terms of pandemic response. So each of them kind of acted individually. Now, that really came because the federal government wasn't doing anything, you know, and these state governments were in panic because this disease was coming and there was nothing they could do. But now he's kind of backtracking and saying, no, the Supreme Court, like, didn't let me govern. Bolsonaro likes to create these imaginary enemies, as he did before he got elected. Obviously, it's harder to find enemies when you are the head of state of a powerful country like Brazil. But I feel like today is an attempt to do that again, is an attempt to kind of carve out these imaginary enemies and play himself almost as a victim, you know, the real Brazilian who's fighting against a corrupt system. And the Supreme Court, you know, is at the moment enemy number one in that.
The Supreme Court enemy number one, at the start of last month, and we were talking about the parallels with Donald Trump, one of the Brazilian president's sons, Eduardo Bolsonaro, paid a call to Trump Tower in New York, this in preparation for Brazil, a Congress by conservative lobbyists. The CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee, has a Brazilian branch. It's modeled on the CPAC in the U.S. And this past weekend, Donald Trump Jr. addressed CPAC Brazil by video link after stating that he couldn't make it because of flights from New Jersey were canceled because of the remnants of Hurricane Ida. Your thoughts, Fernando Santiago, when you see Bolsonaro attach himself to the Trump brand?
Well, we cannot deny, I think nobody can deny, the fact that Bolsonaro seems to be a huge fan of Trump's style of doing politics. And, well, in that way, one can understand, but I think it's not the most, that's my personal view, it's not the most abile way of doing politics. I mean, Trump is not a very controversial person, and Bolsonaro as well. I think he would have a lot to gain getting a little bit more moderate than this radical style, which is his style. He was elected based on that style. So who am I to say he better change? But it's really true. He likes it. It seems to be their model of doing things.
And then you talked earlier about the resilience of Brazil's institutions. In the U.S., it really was a real test, what happened on January the 6th with those riots at the Capitol. Do you fear that something like that could happen in Brazil?
Well, I don't. Well, Brazil is a very complicated country. I mean, whenever you try to predict something in Brazil, there's a famous saying that says that one of old politicians said that in Brazil, even the past is doubtless. So, yes, I do fear, but still, again, I believe in Brazilian's institutions. They are indeed very solid. We've been through many challenges since Brazil got out of the dictatorship. So we must not forget that Brazil is a very young democracy, and it was tested and tested again, two impeachments already, and the institution stayed strong. But politics is politics.
Marcia Camargos?
No, the politics, they didn't stay strong because the institutions were really shaken with this coup d'etat against Dilma.
You call it a coup d'etat still?
It was, clearly.
It's an impeachment vote.
Well, it wasn't. I mean, they've manipulated everybody in order to
take Dilma. And then there was a presidential election. That was a fair vote, wasn't it?
A fair vote for
Bolsonaro got elected, right?
He got elected thanks to the fake news spread by WhatsApp, by Facebook, which didn't cancel their accounts. They could have done that. They should have done, because it was criminal, but they didn't.
And here's a little bit of it that was people fed up with the Petrobras scandal, with Lavajato.
They were never really proved to start with. And nowadays, Bolsonaro is the consequence of all these things that started, even with the election of the parliament in 2014, a very conservative parliament that was elected. And this parliament allowed to have the coup d'etat against Dilma and the imprisonment of Lula. He was arrested illegally by Judge Sergio Moro in order to leave the way free for Bolsonaro. That's corruption in a very huge level.
Samantha Pearson, your thoughts on the strength of Brazil's institutions?
Yeah, I'm not optimistic, to be honest. I mean, Brazilians have always had a relatively little trust in their institutions. And I feel like since Bolsonaro took office, he's actively tried to attack the few things that actually Brazilians do have some trust in. So one of them being the media, the mainstream media. Brazilians prior to Bolsonaro did actually trust relatively what the media said. Now a lot of his supporters hate the media. I mean, down on the streets today, there's a lot of signs against Brazilian media organizations and even international organizations. And also Brazilians, I feel in general, didn't have many doubts about their voting system, and their electronic voting system is one of the most modern for a developing country. It's been praised by international bodies. And now Bolsonaro is actively trying to destroy trust in the voting system. So, I mean, we saw what happened in the US, right? Brazil, and Brazil is not the US. I feel like Brazilian institutions are weaker. It's a more chaotic place. There's definitely going to be violence, in my opinion, today. Just a question of to what extent, and also to what extent that is backed by institutions like the military police, the military. I still think it's going to be isolated bouts of violence, but as we said, do not predict Brazil.
Right, which is what Fernando said. Fernando, before the U.S. election, Donald Trump had talked up the possibility of fraud when he was down in the polls. He lost. He then claimed there was fraud. This idea that Jair Bolsonaro is floating, that we need paper ballots as well as electronic voting, what do you make of it?
Well, I don't think it's a good point for him to make, because I agree with what have been said, that Brazil's electronic vote system is very strong. Still, when I say Brazil's institutions are strong, that means that they resist to attacks coming from any side. It's not the first time a president go against the Supreme Court, which has a very different, way of being in Brazil than in all the other countries. The Supreme Court in Brazil is a major political actor, almost, is being filmed. The judges are filmed every day while giving their decisions and everything, which is very odd. But on the ballots, electronic ballots, I think they are a safe way, and they have been tested, and I don't think there's a deal on that matter.
We talked about how it's not just corruption allegations flying, it's how you manage the country. We talked about COVID. There's an indicator that could worry Jair Bolsonaro a lot, and that's inflation, the rate hitting nearly 9% in July. It's the 14th straight month of increase. And here you see the graph showing Brazil's growth, and it's predicted to dip just below the flat line for this quarter. Samantha Pearson, Brazil, it's since the heyday when Lula's president, we still haven't seen the kind of booming growth that we saw in the old days.
Exactly. So, I mean, Lula did have some luck in that he was president during, you know, one of Brazil's biggest ever commodity booms. But yeah, Brazil is that constant story of expectation and hope followed by utter disappointment. And we've seen that a little bit with Bolsonaro on the economic front as well. He won a lot of support in 2018 from the financial markets in Brazil, the banking sector here, and they were important in adding legitimacy to his candidacy. And Bolsonaro promised lots of economic reforms, which largely haven't happened. And then also the man on the street, the kind of poor families in Brazil, they believed in Bolsonaro as well in terms of employment and keeping down inflation. Now, inflation is key because if you speak to a lot of Brazilians now, poor families, they'll say, my God, the cost of beans has gone up so much, the cost of rice has gone up so much, and they blame Bolsonaro for that. So on one side, that's happening with poor Brazilians, but also you speak to people in the banking sector now, they're fed up with Bolsonaro. They call him an idiot. it's his chaotic style as well. It's not just what he does or what he doesn't do. It's the fact that he, you know, comes out with all guns blaring, making some ridiculous remark that makes the headlines, which is not great for investors who like boring presidents and predictability. So they were even behind closed doors saying, you know, if Lula comes back as president, so be it. We can deal with that. At least it's going to be a constant government. We know what Lula's like. So, yeah, he's losing support on the economic front on both sides.
Too erratic. Right. Why is inflation rising?
Inflation is rising because of the exchange rate, but also because the exchange rate means that Brazil's real got particularly weak against the dollar, which meant that Brazilians were exporting a lot of commodities, which then caused a shortage in the domestic market. So there's a lot of factors. A lot of that is not also to do with, it's not Bolsonaro's fault necessarily. The pandemic played a big role in that as well. But that doesn't matter, you know, to the average Brazilian on the street. He sees the price of beans go up during Bolsonaro's government and it's Bolsonaro's fault.
We've talked about parallels with the United States, Marcia Camargos, and what it was like under Trump and what it's still like with the so-called culture wars that exist there and the polarization. There's one hot-button issue right now that we haven't broached so far, and that is the case that's pending before the Supreme Court regarding indigenous people. We've heard strong language from Jair Bolsonaro. We're expecting some kind of big ruling regarding whether or not they have the right to get back land that was seized decades ago. Your thoughts on what'll happen when the Supreme Court rules?
Well, when the Supreme Court rules and he is obliged to step off office, things will change a lot because they were saying about inflation.
But on the specific instance of indigenous people, who, by the way, rallied this Independence Day for their rights.
You were asking if things will change, yes?
No, how will they change once the Supreme Court has ruled? Will it be even more polarized?
Yes, they're real because Bolsonaro, we are talking about corruption and inflation, but he just destroyed the country. You said about corruption during Lula's government, but he took millions of people out of extreme poverty. He improved social programs very strongly, and that's why he was the middle class, part of the middle class, wasn't happy with Lula. And things are getting worse and worse with Bolsonaro, and he's a real threat for democracy.
This land rights issue, Fernando Santiago, how much will it play in the build-up to elections next year?
Well, I'm not so sure that it will have a capital importance on that. Mostly, it will be, can be used by the opposition in order to to go against or in benefit of Bolsonaro. It depends on the results, of course. But the thing is, the Indians, despite the historical heritage that they have in Brazil, they are not very quantitatively representative on amount. They cannot change the destination or the end of an election. So there's going to be just a case for to play around the pros or cons.
Samantha Pearson, you agree?
Sorry, could you just repeat that? It cut out very quickly.
I said, do you agree that this issue of the land rights for indigenous people, it won't be that big an issue next year?
It's unclear what's going to happen there. I mean, they've been holding protests in Brasilia recently. There was some concern over even what's going to happen today if they're going to be a target. So it's not quite clear yet.
So we've talked about how Brazil's president has played again to his base throughout his tenure since 2018, how he's cried foul. Now, as we head into election period, and our correspondent earlier was saying how this, in fact, is, in a way, this Independence Day, the kickoff of the campaign. Who is going to play kingmaker, Samantha?
Good question. I mean, hopefully it's going to be the voter, you know. I mean, that would be ideal, right? We had an election where the voter could choose the outcome. But in Brazil, things always get messy, and it's going to get even messier next year. I mean, Bolsonaro could win. I suppose he could actually win an outright victory next year, and that would make things simpler. But it doesn't look that way. The polls are suggesting that Lula would probably beat him in a runoff vote. And then I imagine then exactly what's going to happen then, right? That's the big question. So probably, and this is me trying to second guess Brazil, which I've just said is not a good thing to do, but probably what we're going to see is violence. At least we're going to see bouts of violence. Now, Bolsonaro has quite a lot of support with the military police, with less senior people within the military. And that is a big question mark right now. We just don't know what they would do in that situation, because if you think about it, he's going to be losing against Lula, you know, who a lot of people, including lawyers, would say who actually deserves to be in jail right now. So, I mean, the legal grounds for that is pretty murky. It would fall to the electoral court and then the Supreme Court. But it all really, I mean, as any democracy, it depends on what the military does in Brazil and the military police.
What the military does, what the military police does. Fernando Santiago, you heard Marcia Camargo's worry aloud about militia groups that support the president. Could there be much violence in the year to come?
Well, I agree that we are in a situation very complicated because the country, it is very polarized. And indeed, Lula, well, he's ahead on the researches right now, and he has many and very, very many procedures, criminal procedures against him. I remember you, Lula was never acquainted. He was never declared innocent. What they did is recognize that Judge Moro didn't have jurisdiction to judge his case. But the decisions Moro take, technically, they were validated once by a superior court, but composed by three judges, and again by another superior court composed by 11 judges, which means that technically there's some fundamental thing that must be good, must be solid. If not, one of the judges could disagree, and not even one of them did disagree. So if you get into a situation in which we have Bolsonaro from one side and Lula from the other side, which many people don't want in power because they see him as a criminal. Indeed, I agree that could have a lot of tension. I'm not able right now to say what could go on, but some crisis, of course, a crisis could go over.
All right, it's only the beginning so far of the again of the buildup to those elections in October of 2022. I want to thank you so much, Fernando Santiago, for joining us from Lisbon, Marcia Camargos, Samantha Pearson in Sao Paulo. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.